Section 3, People and Culture in Antebellum, Louisiana. As you read, look for contrasting cultures of plantation owners, slaves, and free people of color, controversies and contributions of newer immigrant groups, dangers and pleasures of life in Antebellum, Louisiana, terms, veranda, overseer, slave quarters. Slavery was certainly a business, and the business of cash crop agriculture depended on it as a labor system. However, the people on both sides of that system developed distinctive cultures that grew out of the practice of slavery and the profits it produced. Plantation culture. The wealth generated through the cultivation of sugar and cotton allowed many plantation owners to build large homes. These plantation houses varied in architectural style, but many of them had two stories and columns, either along the front or all around the house to support a veranda, a long, open porch, usually with a roof. The master's home was sometimes called the big house, and it generally sat in a prominent place near the front of a plantation, often facing the nearest river or road. Planters prided themselves on their hospitality, and they were expected to entertain visitors in grand style. Because plantations were often distant from one another, owners also hosted overnight house parties for fellow planters and their families. Day-long meals and entertainments were followed by evening parties and balls featuring music, dancing, and elaborate ball gowns for the ladies. The women of a plantation family were expected to raise large families and oversee the domestic activities in the big house and in the service buildings surrounding it. This included the kitchen buildings, which were almost always separated from the main house in this era because of the great risk of fire. The plantation owner and his sons were expected to oversee the business aspects of the plantation. Planters who could afford to do so hired full-time overseers, white men who acted as managers of the slaves and farming operations of plantations, and spent much of their time pursuing their favorite leisure activities. Slave culture. Like their masters, enslaved people developed distinctive cultural forms. Except for domestic slaves who lived alongside the family in the main house, most slaves lived in small but nearby houses arranged in an area referred to as the slave quarters. The level at which masters or overseers monitored the slave quarters varied, but in their quarters, slaves gathered to cook, talk, sing, dance, mourn, and share their lives with one another. Although slaves needed the permission of their master to marry, some chose their own partners. Families developed in the quarters, and generations passed down their knowledge and cultural practices. Some slaves still had memories of ancestors and beliefs dating back to Africa. Teaching slaves to read was illegal, so most slave culture was oral, passed along in songs and stories. As the antebellum period proceeded, the slave population became more Americanized and English-speaking, though some slaves continued to speak French along with their masters. Both masters and slaves pursued religious beliefs, but slaves tended to have a distinct interpretation of biblical texts and religious practices that were separate from their masters. Free people of color. Although the population of free people of color became significant as early as the Spanish period, the population of this group did not reach its height until 1840, when their numbers reached 25,000. Free people of color occupied a legal and social middle ground between free whites and slaves. They had some of the same rights as white people, but as their number grew, the legislature began to pass laws that restricted their rights. In 1830, the legislature passed an act that required free people of color who had come to the state after 1825 either to leave or be imprisoned. In 1859, the legislature even passed a law ordering free people of color to select a master and become a slave for life. Such laws proved difficult to enforce, but they show how this population seemed problematic to some. Some free people of color were also slave owners. The best documented case is of the Metoyer family, who was descended from a slave named Marie Therese and a Frenchman named Pierre-Claude Thomas Metoyer. Newer immigrant groups. Free people of color were not the only population whose presence proved controversial in the final years of the antebellum era. The large numbers of Germans and Irish who came to Louisiana upset social conventions. Most Germans immigrated in family groups, yet they rankled, annoyed, upset many Protestants with their distinctive culture of socializing at beer gardens with their families after Sunday worship. The Irish had an even less favorable reputation than the Germans. The Irish tended to arrive poor, if not penniless, since most were fleeing a devastating potato famine. Those who made it to the United States were often willing to take the worst jobs imaginable. Slave owners sometimes hired Irish laborers to clear land or do projects they considered too dangerous or risky for their own slaves. Although they were often criticized for being dirty, unkempt, or untidy, and hard drinking, by the late 19th century the Irish had fully assimilated into the state's cultural fabric, particularly in and around New Orleans. Risks. New immigrants faced more than economic challenges. The conditions of plumbing and draining were poor in most American cities, and diseases were often spread through contaminated water. Standing water also provided a breeding ground for mosquitoes that could spread yellow fever to humans. In more than half the years of the 19th century, yellow fever outbreaks plagued New Orleans, sometimes killing thousands of people in a single summer. The worst antebellum outbreak occurred in 1853. In August alone, more than 1,000 people died each week. By the time the epidemic ended, 1 in 12 New Orleanians had died. Casualties were much higher among recent immigrants, especially the Irish. 20% of the city's Irish immigrants died that year. Daily life. Despite disease and the challenges brought about by ethnic tensions, political infighting, and the inequality inherent in a slave society, Louisianians continued to find ways to enjoy and find meaning in life. In rural areas, churches served as community centers where like-minded people met, worshiped, married, and formed new families. Even as politics became more partisan, political party gatherings provided social opportunities. Although speakers sometimes talked for several hours, competing parties sponsored barbecues and served special treats like lemonade and, for the men, hard liquor. The city. On the eve of the Civil War, New Orleans was one of the nation's largest and wealthiest cities. All kinds of people, slave and free, native and immigrant, visitor and citizen, mixed and mingled on its streets. Those streets were sometimes dangerous, but were also filled with the potential for hearing strange languages and experiencing unique cultural events like the Sunday slave dances in Congo Square. As Louis Moreau Gottschalk's childhood and subsequent career remind us, despite its inequality, Louisiana's mixing and mingling of its people created riches that were cultural as well as economic. Special feature, From Slave to Slave Owner, Marie-Thérèse Coinquin. Marie-Thérèse Coinquin was born in 1742 as a slave to the founder of Natchitoches, Louis Juchereau de Saint-Denis. Later, a French soldier named Pierre-Claude Thomas Metoir purchased her. Together, they would have 10 children during their long relationship. In 1786, Metoir bought Marie-Thérèse her freedom, along with the freedom of their surviving children. He also gave her a parcel of land at Cedar Bend on the Cane River in Natchitoches Parish. With the help of her children, Marie-Thérèse began growing tobacco on their small plantation. She trapped wild animals and sold their byproducts. She also produced medicines, using skills that she had apparently learned from her African-born parents. Marie-Thérèse started a cattle ranch on her land and hired a Spanish man to manage it. As the plantation grew, Marie-Thérèse needed help to run it, so she eventually bought 3 slaves, 1 female and 2 males. By the time of her death in 1816, Marie-Thérèse's plantation covered over 1,000 acres, and she owned 16 slaves. Her children would continue to work and expand the plantation and eventually become the wealthiest free family of color in the nation. Her descendants formed one of the main branches of the Cane River Creole community. Today, you can explore sites associated with the Metoir family along the Cane River. Marie-Thérèse's son, Augustin Metoir, donated the land for the community's St. Augustine Church. His brother, Thomas Metoir, was the architect and builder of the original church building. Though Thomas's building has been replaced, its original bell still rings in today's church tower. Thomas Metoyer also built Melrose Plantation, starting with Yucca House, African House, and a barn in the years between 1810 and 1815. He began construction of the plantation's big house in 1832, but died during the building process. His son completed the house. Today, Melrose Plantation is listed as a National Historic Landmark and is open to visitors. Think about the time period in which Marie-Thérèse Quenquen lived. Why do you think she continued to buy and own slaves, even though she was once a slave herself?